It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yeah.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
There are rich teams and there are poor teams. Then there's 50 feet of crap. And then there's us.
This is not Matthew Soze. This is Richard Propes. I am filling in for Matt Soze. This is WFYI, HD to the Point, Film Sociology. I am joined by... Who am I joined by?
An illustrious panel.
Yes, I'm Greg Swarbig, the Director of Marketing and Public Relations for Heartland Film.
I'm Ed Johnsonot. I'm the film critic for Nouveau News Weekly.
Wow. The collective power in this room is intimidating.
And a big shout out to Matt Soze. It's a shame he couldn't be here, and you know, I'm so thrilled that he's made the cast of the new Star Wars movie, and you know, just the idea that they're filming this early is really something.
I really never would have pegged him for Yoda, though.
I think it's Yoda's son, actually.
So congratulations, Matt. Enjoy the view.
Oh, you'd think he'd know better than to leave the show with me again. I don't know. I guess he didn't get the hate mail from the last time, so...
He's never left it with me once, so he knows, you know, he's still functioning at an adult level.
Let's be honest, you are a little scary, Ed.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. And we're glad to have Kobe back.
Back?
You're back. You were not with us the last time. I was dismayed.
Oh, yes.
Ankle bracelet problems?
No, no, Ed.
No problem with you.
Oh, so it's still working fine.
Don't talk about it, Ed. Oh,
sorry.
That's all right. WFYI still accepts you. I'm glad they have this work release program. So, anyway, we don't have a lot on our agenda this week. We have a couple of new releases. We have
a couple big ones too.
We do have a couple of big ones. They're both going to be fun to talk about. I think we have some varying opinions on those films, so that should be fun. Ed and I have not had a fist fight in quite a while.
No, we haven't even discussed at least one of these. We haven't discussed at all, so
really?
That'll be interesting.
That's true, because we usually sit fairly close to one another at screenings, and the last one we didn't.
No.
So,
and listeners can't see this, but Kobe specifically sat me between the two tonight, so I'm the buffer.
This is the pacing portion of the program, so we'll see how that goes. No, all right, let's get started here with actual movie reviews.
That's good.
Well, you know, we try to do that every once in a while on the show. I think we could actually just ramble for the whole hour, and it would be reasonably entertaining.
We'll hit some sports talk, hit some food talk, and then we'll talk about some movies.
You know,
that's usually how it pans out in the first 5 minutes.
All right.
With Matt gone, we'll actually talk about movies today.
Oh, what a concept. We should be talking about Shakespeare, because he is performing this weekend.
Richmond
Shakespeare?
Yeah.
Richmond Shakespeare.
Shakespeare is performing
Shakespeare?
This weekend?
Shakespeare is performing this weekend.
Holy moly.
Matthew Shakespeare.
Wow.
I think he's like a distant relative.
And what play is he in?
Actually, go ahead, Rich.
I don't have a clue.
This is worse than that time. This is almost like that time when Gina didn't know about it's his production of It's a Wonderful Life, and she got on and she read the flyer on air. No, the Richmond Shakespeare Festival is next weekend that he and Lynn are heading up, June 6th through, I believe it's the 13th.
Cool. And what play is he doing?
Much Ado About Nothing and...
Oh, that's right.
Oh, I want to say Hamlet, but I'm not sure.
And
visit richmondshakes.com for...
Richmond Shakes?
Richmond Shakes.
That's cute. Like Alabama shakes?
No, that is nothing at all like the Alabama.
Wow.
I'm on it. I'm looking. Are
you on it? You're looking it up?
RichmondShakespeareFestival.org. There you go.
Cool.
June 6th through the 15th, actually. My apologies. Wow. That was the 13th. June 6th through the 15th. So if you don't have any plans already for next weekend, and that's okay.
And you really want to go to Richmond. So let's face it, it's kind of the bathroom of Indiana.
Oh, my God.
Whoa.
Don't worry, they can't pick up this show.
You know, though, that the White Castles in Richmond have fish nibblers all year round.
Not just for Lent.
Whoa. We'll sometimes
that's why
drive
they're classing it up. That's why, what's more classy than Shakespeare, really? So,
Shakespeare and fish nibblers.
Nonetheless.
I think they should worry about getting electricity first and then bring on Shakespeare.
Oh, while on the subject.
You know what?
Matt
does talk about how he goes to Ohio sometimes to watch football games.
Exactly. He just doesn't acknowledge it. It's because they don't have electricity in Richmond. I'm only kidding. I actually I went to grad school in Richmond, so
The Richmond Shakespeare Festival, June 6th through the 15th, producing Much Ado About Nothing and the Tragedy of Romeo and Juliet in the historic Richmond Starginnet Piano Factory.
Sponsored by White Castle Fish Nibblers.
And hopefully not starring Haley Steinfeld, who has proven she cannot play Juliet. Let's see.
He's just a big bundle of hate today, I'll tell you. Oh, my God.
This is my other persona, Greg, by the way. You usually see my nice guy side.
I like the side.
I was going to say, you get me on the radio, and I become an entirely different person. So microphones are dangerous with me. All right, let's start off with what should be a popular. I'd say I'm going to be interested to see what actually ends up number one this week.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it going to be Disney, or is it going to be a simply awful Seth MacFarlane film?
It's going to be Disney.
I put my money in Maleficent as well.
Because it's a truly moving picture.
That's right.
All right. Do we have a trailer for Maleficent?
Oh, yes, we do. Let's have a listen.
Well, well. I shall bestow a gift on the child. Before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she will fall into a sleep like death. Curious little beastie. Bring her to me. I know you're there. Don't be afraid.
I am not afraid.
Then come out.
Then you'll be afraid.
All the other fairies fly. And why don't you?
I had wings once. They were strong. But they were stolen from me. There is evil in this world. Hatred. And revenge.
Bring me her head.
I call on those who live in the shadows.
Fight with me now. Is it true? Are you Maleficent?
All right, if you didn't guess, that was Disney's Maleficent, which, I don't know, I think we have varying opinions here. It did receive the Truly Moving Picture Award.
Yeah, so Heartland Film would give an award called a Truly Moving Picture Award to studio-released films that are entertaining films but do more than just entertain. So, we screened the film, and we ended up giving the award. It was a close vote, but we really liked Angelina Jolie's character, her portrayal of Maleficent. We thought it was a very nice performance and added some depth. I think it actually was kind of, if you look at Frozen and now Maleficent, Disney is really trying to kind of go back and make these.
They're really getting into frigid characters.
Yeah, pretty much. Frigid characters. There you go.
Thank you.
Sad trombone. Okay, and... No, but yeah, it was a great... I thought I enjoyed the film. I mean, I used to work at Disney. Mm-hmm. I did a couple internships down there, so it was very fun. I didn't know what to make of the trailers initially. Mm-hmm. For me, it was like watching Sleeping Beauty in Middle Earth, or like if you're a huge nerd and play Magic cards, it was like you're in the world of Magic where there's tree creatures fighting people and these weird little fat troll creatures and fairies that were pixies and pixies that were fairies and a lot of really kind of confusing things, but the mm-hmm. whole experience... It's a great summer popcorn movie.
If you go in there expecting Sleeping Beauty, you're going to be disappointed.
Right.
Because it's not Sleeping Beauty.
And they pretty much rewrite the story as well.
They really
I won't
do.
Spoil anything, but...
Yeah, I don't want to spoil it, but they take one of, I think, Disney's most beloved villains and really kind of give her a backstory and kind of explain the character a little more in a way that kind of rings of Disney, but also doesn't ring of Disney. I mean, I thought it was an edgier film than we usually get from Disney.
Kind of along the lines of the darker Snow White and the Huntsman from last year, it kind of feels like. Mm-hmm.
Only actually entertaining.
Oh, okay.
Or reasonably in it, I guess.
And with actresses that have more than one facial expression. Kristen Stewart.
Not to name names, Kristen Stewart. What'd you think, Ed?
I thought Angelina Jolie was really good. I thought she was a great presence in the film also. I thought the film around her was squishy and poorly written, unclear in too many areas and confusing. And I'm still not sure what Maleficent can do and what she can't and when she can use this power and when she can't. You know, it's it seemed to be more, you know, for plot convenience than anything. I didn't the Imelda Stanton and the other little pixies were they pixies?
I think they were pixies.
Yeah, that got on my
nerves. Not the rock band.
The special effects were bad. I thought on them too.
I was really disappointed with the 3D. Of course, I'm usually disappointed with 3D.
Yeah,
but you definitely don't need to see it in 3D.
Oh my, no, no.
I can't imagine.
I usually opt for 2D if I can't, unless or if I do 3D, it's the IMAX. That's a fun experience. That's a whole different thing.
But for me, I mean, it was a movie I wouldn't see, but Angelina Jolie both visually and in her performance, it's her movie, you know, it's her movie, and she pulls it up to a whole nother level.
I was impressed that they actually put a first time director, Robert Stromberg, working with Angelina Jolie, because I felt like she even kind of dominated him. I mean, I felt like. You could feel the places where maybe they were catering to the studio wishes a mm-hmm. little more than I think an experienced director would have done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think you were talking a little bit about, you know, just they're having places where there were all kinds of moments where they were appealing to the teen boys,
right.
Moments where there were, you know, girl moments, and not to say that things have to be gender, you know, I don't want to go that direction, but... there seemed to be a clear effort to widen the demographics of the film.
Yeah, it was almost like there was three endings to the film for each kind of different demo. You know, the cool kind of fight scene, you had the relationship with Aurora. So there is something for everybody in that regard. So if they were trying to cast a wide net, they did a great job. This film, it was the executive producer. One of them was Don Hahn, who's been at the Heartland Film Festival different times throughout the years. And he actually, I mean, what's neat is that he worked with Disney Animation back in the day shortly after Walt's death. So it is kind of neat having somebody within that area, too, who's kind of has passed the torch and is kind of going into this 21st century Disney formula. So it'd be interesting to kind of talk with him and kind of see what their thought process was for everything.
Something else with this film, there's certain movies like Brokeback Mountain is one where a significant percentage of the audience goes in already loving the film. They're so gunned up by the whole idea of it that they just want to sit down and have the experience they expect to have.
Mm-hmm.
And Maleficent's another one of those films. I was listening to people in the audience. They were crazy about the movie before it started.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
I kind of felt that way about Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, really? That's another one. Yeah, that is. A lot of people loved it already. They just needed confirmation.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, that movie had... I was pumped to see that. It would have had to do a whole lot or not have done a whole lot for me being really disappointed.
Well, Brokeback Mountain was one where, I mean, it turned out to really be as good as people expected, but there were a lot of people, they made their decisions before they entered the theater, you know, and it was just a matter of just watching it play out, You know, and that's fine, but it's nice when a movie actually lives up to it. Mm-hmm. I think in this case, it isn't as good as the movie there, you know, that they already loved. But it's still there, a lot of happy people when that movie was finished.
I think so. I mean, I think the audience, I mean, certainly the screening we saw, I was surprised it wasn't a full screening. I don't know if they just didn't market the screening well, or I'm not quite sure why it wasn't packed, because I really do expect the audiences to turn out for this
one. I think it's going to be the number one movie for the week easily.
I think that with their marketing, the initial teasers, you know, it was kind of the really atmospheric, kind of creepy, hiding behind briar patches and that kind of stuff, and
If you like Angelina Jolie, you're going to love this film. Yeah. I mean, her performance here is just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I really wasn't sure it would be. I thought it could be a caricature. I thought, you know, because there are moments where she does the pose, but it fits. It works.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Charlton Copley.
But ever since the stuff happened to him in District 9, he's just been in a bad mood in every movie he's been in. I'll tell you.
And he had promised at the beginning. He thought, okay.
Little wimpy prince. Oh my goodness! You know, I mean, he just
here. Drink this.
Maybe it's my age, but I mean, it was just like, you're not a prince. You're the pool boy, or
pool boy.
Yeah, I mean, he just was. You know, there was nothing there that went, I'm going to save anything. You know, or I'm going to be noble. Or
I kept thinking that there was no way Maleficent, who's wise and strong and everything, would have fallen for little wimpy guy.
No.
And cuddled with him, and, you know.
I wonder if that teenage angst, you know, the doing something you're not supposed to do, not supposed to talk to the humans, so this guy's a string bean, but I'll run with it.
Oh,
I'll try it out.
Drove me nuts. We should warn folks that this is a fairly strong PG film, I thought.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat.
Nothing offensive.
You mean bordering on this should be maybe considered PG-13?
I think
there
are a couple scenes that I thought were fairly intense for a PG-rated film.
Yeah, fight scenes. You see people get thrashed around. And I don't think it was that crazy, but there are some more kind of dark.
Unfortunately, you know, the special effects were muddled enough that you really didn't see much. Yeah. But
Let's just talk about the elephant in the room, the fairies. They call them the pixies, but in the original movie they had the three kind of comedic fairies that help watch over Princess Aurora. They have these creepy kind of CG faces. Well, I liked a lot of the special effects, but the faces were a little off. And they didn't have the same kind of personalities. So that people are going into the film wondering if it's exactly like the animated film. It follows the same storyline in Maleficent and stuff in terms of the look. But a lot of the stuff is different, including these three kind of annoying, I'll be honest, kind of pixie characters that...
Yeah. I agree. Yeah, they didn't work for me. I was kind of grateful when they kind of made a transition in the film. Again, I don't want to give anything away, but it made them more realistic to look at.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say.
And they failed miserably at their job. I mean, the whole thing is to watch over Aurora for 16 years in secrecy.
I'm amazed.
First
she
day
survived.
On the job in the cottage. Maleficent's checking things out, so that was kind of weird. So
that's funny.
I won't go any further, but.
The film also stars Elle Fanning, who was in one of my favorite Heartland films, Phoebe in Wonderland.
Yeah,
and she was fine.
She was great, actually.
Yeah.
I like her a little more with every film. So if nothing else for her, I'm kind of hoping this does really well, because she seems to keep picking projects that don't do exactly very well. So.
I wonder what Dakota's doing now.
I think she's going into directing, if I read an article correctly, I think, just yesterday.
Really?
I saw the headline and didn't read the article itself, but I think she might jump to directing,
That would be cool. We need more women filmmakers. Hopefully ones that will make decent films, unlike our DVD release for this week that we'll talk about shortly.
So, stay tuned for negativity coming up in just a few minutes.
Sorry, I've been nice for too long here.
More hate up next.
No, but overall, I think it was just the redemptive quality and the depth of the character Maleficent that really put the Truly Moving Picture Award jury over the edge. So I think that was kind of the saving grace of the film. And I think people who are going into it and maybe go with their kids and are just thinking, hey, I'm taking along. What am I going to see here? Might be surprised.
I think so. I think so. It's a deep film. It's a great character. I'm with Ed in the sense that I thought it was a flawed film and certainly a flawed script. But I enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't regret seeing it.
I didn't either.
Like the next film we're going to talk about.
Mm.
So, which...
Now that was a good movie.
we will go to.
Yes. Oh, not gonna set when it up or.
Do you want me to set it up? Yeah. What do you want, Kobe? I want to keep you happy, Kobe.
Seth MacFarlane made Family Guy.
It's crass
and ugly. He made a lot of clones of Family Guy that were crass and ugly. Young guys loved that stuff and made him a very, very rich man. Then he made a movie called Ted that has some really funny parts and a lot of boring parts. And he made more and more money. Seth wants to be a movie star very bad. And he used his clout and his money to make this movie, which sucks. And it doesn't suck because of the gross-out humor. I like gross-out humor. It's crummy gross-out humor. There, is that our setup?
Let's take a listen.
Oh, hey, look, it's the ice. Why is it so big?
So it doesn't melt. It's actually really interesting how they do it. It's this one company out in Boston that...
That went south so fast! Oh!
The American West is a terrible place in time. Everything out here that's not you wants to kill you. Angry drunk people. Hungry animals. Outlaws. Oh, the doctor!
I couldn't save her.
She had a splinter.
Doc, what the hell were you supposed to do?
I would like to welcome a new member to our community.
Welcome to our awesome town.
What's with this fair?
Every year, people die.
Really?
Everybody hold still.
People die at the fair.
People die at the fair.
Somebody in this town is going to die.
Please don't shoot us on sex night.
You beat this guy at a gunfight, you're going to be a real hero.
He's the most vicious gunfighter in the territory.
I'm going to teach you how to shoot.
Start.
Dude, you really shouldn't drink it, horse.
Aim up.
Get ready. I'm about to shoot a full load at your can.
Shut up.
Keep going.
Oh, no, I didn't.
You've never seen one?
Yeah, I feel like I should have a piece of cake or something.
All right, you ready?
Yeah.
I know you're here, Stark.
Wow, you look amazing.
I really love that the most alluring fashion today is to simulate a fat ass.
If I was a black guy, this is the meanest trick you could play on me.
A million ways to die in the West.
Maybe the frontier is not so bad after all.
Hey, it's a sweet young couple. Can I interest you folks in a miracle cure?
Holy sh...
And there you have it. That's A Million Ways to Die in the Movie Theater.
By Ed's favorite actor, writer, Seth MacFarlane. Actually, during that break, when we played the trailer, I just updated the Wikipedia page, dictated what you said for Seth MacFarlane.
So, there we go.
Yeah.
That's going in the year-end show.
I can't tell you how much I wish that were true.
You know, part of the thing with the movie, I mean, there are jokes, there are solid jokes in there. And there was a small segment of the audience that was just howling up and really, really laughing.
We call them special people.
There was... Oh.
I'm trying so hard to get you started, Ed. No.
Oh. I'm just stunned. The bulk of the audience at the screening I attended, they laughed some, but nothing what you would expect. Part of this is... there's no real point of view here. You know, you think of Blazing Saddles. Mel Brooks knew exactly what he was making.
Yeah.
He knew the point of view of the thing. Seth is a wise guy outsider, except he's not an outsider. Why is he there? You know, if he's this far outside of it all, why is he there? That needs to be set up for the movie to work. It's never set up. The other people, either they're clueless about all the things he's complaining about in this very hostile environment. Why? Yeah, and I mean, they just, if you're going to do a farce on this level, you need to arrange what you're doing, but Seth MacFarlane isn't smart enough to do that. And so he's toothy and annoying.
Yeah, and he tried to do a lot of the Blazing Saddles-esque racially driven jokes, and that most of them were just very awkward, and you held your breath during those parts.
I mean, yeah, the jokes were just so completely intentional that, I mean, they were almost too intentional to be offensive. I mean, I mean,
the slave joke. I mean, just, you know, it slaps you in the face so hard that you just sit there reeling from it instead of laughing.
Yeah.
You know, and it isn't till they set it right after the closing credits that the laugh actually comes.
Yeah. That's
not how you
can.
Yeah. And that's not, but that's not how you construct a comedy.
Right.
You know, and there's a scene where they pay homage to a very, very popular movie from the 1980s that involved the Old West. And the idea of the scene is really good, but the execution of it's terrible. They come in on a building. They don't have anything else going on for why he's going to this building. They just come in into this building. They open the door. You see the character from the old movie. He makes a couple of lines. If this was done right, we would have been howling. But it wasn't done right. It's like, look, here's our 80s homage. Ta-da!
And they've been playing that in some of the trailers recently, too.
Yeah. Oh, that's... Yeah. And, you know, it's like... And we'll pause and give you time to laugh when there's no pause needed. That's another thing with this movie. Did you notice how much time was spent with silence?
Yeah.
To allow us room to laugh when we weren't.
Yeah, I think the most painful scene is when...
Oh,
really? Seth MacFarlane's character, he you're not supposed to drink in horse, which is supposed to be funny, and that wasn't funny. So the whole scene starts with an unfunny shtick and then keeps going. He gets on his horse, goes to his estranged girlfriend's place, and he's just going back and forth for probably a solid minute or two. Uh-huh. And it just wasn't funny. And then he just got his horse.
It was almost painfully unfunny. Yeah. I mean, it really was hard to watch. And I kept thinking, okay, either you... editor should have been fired because they were okay with this. Or this is one of those films where you're sitting around wondering, okay, did you not catch this sometime while watching the film? You know, how did the studio? I mean, honestly, if I were a studio head, I'd be looking at this and saying, okay, either we're not going to release this, we'll send it straight to DVD, or I mean,
I think it was, hey, Family Guy, Ted, this guy makes money, let him go.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's got his audience. He understands his audience. I think they just let him go.
And the all-star cast helps a little bit as well.
It does.
And you have Charlize Theron acting, really acting, right next to Seth MacFarlane, who can't act
at all.
You know, and just made it more painful watching, you know, him be center of every scene for the whole movie.
I was
movie.
Amazed how emotionally involved she got in the film, considering she had nothing to act with.
No.
I mean, I was amazed. She really did. She does do pretty well in this film.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was interested in watching it because of her.
Neil Patrick Harris, he gives it his all like he always does, and in some incredibly gross scenes that don't work. I mean, they get a shock laugh, but they, you know, Sarah Silverman and Giovanni Ribisi?
Yeah,
they have some funny stuff that's stretched too thin.
I don't know if you guys realize, but I'm kind of an 80s and 90s kid. I'm 30 years old, so the best cameo was Mr. Belding from Saved by the Bell was in this film. So that alone redeems the entire thing. 4 stars. They have this.
You're making me sad now.
They have this fair. They have this fair, and this guy selling tonic is Mr. Belding.
Granted, I didn't realize.
He's three
Belding.
Times larger than Saved
Mr.
by the Bell.
Mr. Belding was dead.
He's not. That's just an urban legend.
Wow.
Just like Chumley from Pawn Stars.
I got my news from Facebook.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, I mean, other things, too. There's a lot of it's kind of the more subtle humor they didn't try to poke fun at. Like, they're talking about, it's more the time-related things where they're talking about the era and the period and everything, which I went with my buddy, and honestly, I probably wouldn't have seen this film if it wasn't for going with my buddy, who I know we can go see Dum Dum, you know, hence the buddy comedy name. And we went, and we always talked about, hey, if time travel seems so romantic, but you go in the back in the past, if you get a cold, like they talk about in the film, you're going to be screwed where you might, you know, die from something really random, or if a doctor's going to take care of you, he's going to pull out his gnarly rusted saw and cut off your leg or something. That's
what happened to me, you know.
Oh. Sorry to bring it up.
Was that line early in the film of his, everything that's not you is trying to kill you? That's a great line.
That is a great line.
If they'd followed through right with that, you know, with a clear point of view, they could have had this, and if they'd had a different lead actor.
Yeah. I really think the biggest mistake in the film was having McFarlane act. Mm-hmm. I don't know why he made that choice. It just boggled my mind.
He probably wrote it too, right?
I didn't even check.
I think he did.
You guys are bringing up the fact that you thought a lot of the jokes were intentional and it's a stretch and it's a reach and they're running it till it's dead. What did you guys think about Ted? Because I kind of felt that way about Ted, where there's, you know, like what you said before we got on air, Ed, I recognized that there were some funny parts in there, but it wasn't necessarily funny.
Yeah, it feels even more stretched out than Ted does. And Ted felt pretty stretched out. You know, but Ted was funnier, I think.
Ted was definitely funnier to me. This felt closer to the film Year One for me. You remember that really awful prehistoric comedy that just did not work. This felt like, you know, I could never figure out if they were trying to make a true spoof on the Westerns, or because some of the production design kind of evokes that old 70s, or, you know, the old serials from Westerns, the original score, which really made me want to stab somebody by the end of the film.
Because
it was just awful, and I'm so awful that I wanted to name the guy who created it, Joel McNeely, because you did a bad score, Joel. I hope you're listening. So
they had, during some of the transitions, the music, it sounded like Star Wars. Did you pick that up?
I did pick that,
where it sounded like Princess Leia's theme, or that little kind of soft flute
I'm
or
surprised
something.
They didn't use the Back to the Future score.
Yeah, I think so. That's not in reference at all to the scene Ed was talking about earlier.
No.
I was very careful.
We're giving
careful.
You thinly veiled very, references, very unlike the Red Band trailer, which gives you everything in the film.
Yeah.
So.
But yeah, there are little things that hit me hard, like when he was talking to Neil Patrick Harris, who is this elite guy who owns this mustachery. And he's talking how he stole his girlfriend because, you know, he can never give them warm blankets and wrapped candies. For some reason, that line hit me really hard. And that was just perfect.
And the mustache song.
Yeah, the wrapped candy. Yeah.
The mustache song was not written for the film. That's an existing song. So don't give.
I know. I actually waited for the credits to see who had written
it. Yeah, he doesn't.
It really is a Sondheim song.
Yeah, don't give McFarlane credit for that song, because that kind of works.
So we say, bottom line, if you're a Family Guy fan, if you're a Seth MacFarlane fan, you'll probably like this. It's pretty much the same thing, but with real people and Seth MacFarlane in the lead role. But probably going
to
be.
If you like Seth MacFarlane in the lead role, it's time to get your medications adjusted.
Yeah, well, and if you like Seth MacFarlane's kind of humor, just stay at home and watch Family Guy on TBS. They run it about 4 hours a night.
Yeah. And the whole Back to the Future scene was like a Family Guy insert where they just totally cut to something random. And yeah.
Not that I'm giving away anything about what he's talking about.
No, not at all.
Not at all.
If you're smart, listeners, you can piece everything together.
You can. All right, I do want to briefly mention we have a DVD release this week. It's really light on DVDs. The only one is a completely sucky film, and that's being nice. It's Endless Love. No, not the 1981 Franco Zeffirelli film, which also really sucked. Which, by the way, did win the Truly Moving Picture Award. No.
I couldn't tell you. I can tell you so.
I'm only kidding.
If it did, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, yeah.
I don't think it did.
I was... Yeah. Now, this stars Alex Pettyfer and Gabriella Wild, basically a new version of the old movie, directed by a Shanna Fest. I can't remember what else she directed. You know, I love when we get women filmmakers and we get them in big budget films, because I think that's a serious lacking of Hollywood. Unfortunately, it's too often with this kind of drivel. And this is just, if you actually did go see this in the theater, if you're one of those 14 people, then, you know, pick up the DVD. Otherwise, you know, Bruce Greenwood is the edgy dad, which is pretty much all he plays anymore.
Yeah.
he seems to be the edgy dad a lot. So, anyway, I think that's about it for DVDs.
Can I throw in something?
Of course you can.
A Blu-ray release coming out, not till the end of July, but it was just announced this week. Twin Peaks on Blu-ray.
Ooh.
With the prequel film Fire Walk With Me. No big excitement there, except when Fire Walk With Me was filmed, he had almost the entire cast of Twin Peaks. He filmed them for the movie, then he cut out nearly 3 hours worth of material and most of the characters, and all of that will be on the Blu-ray.
Wow.
So if you're a Twin Peaks fan, and I am, we're going to finally get to see the stuff that we were hoping to see and didn't get to.
I think the Criterion Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, Wes Anderson's film, came out, I think, on Blu-ray, too.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And if you're a Costco member, they have all of his Criterion Blu-rays for only $19.99.
Let's not be plugging the big boxes.
Hey, no. When you can get a Criterion for under $20, that's pretty great.
They carry Criterion?
It's one teeny little
of
shelf
them.
Amongst
Huge
their...
Huge crates.
I think they only... They
crates
of
Criterion. Crates of Criterion.
Yeah, I was shocked to see them, and so, yeah.
That's cool. Okay. Well, see, now you probably want to join Costco because I'm a Criterion nut. And
you only have to buy one. You don't have to buy 20 of them, which is nice for Blu-rays.
That
is
They're nice. Like Lay's potato chips. You can't have just one. All right. We are going to take a break, and then we'll come back, and we'll talk to Greg Sorvig with the Heartland film. And this is WFYI HD to the Point, Film Sociology.
Not alone.
We got guests.
You got what?
Guests. Guests.
Guests.
Yeah, guests. People. We've got guests coming over.
When?
Now.
Who are you?
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
Opinions are like assholes. Everybody has one.
This is Richard Probst, and I'm back with Ed Johnson out of Nouveau News Weekly and Greg Sorvig, who is the director of PR and marketing, or marketing and PR.
Either way.
Same
thing. Whatever order you like, Richard.
With Heartland Film. If you don't know what Heartland Film is, where have you been? No, I forgot one thing I have to mention about A Million Ways to Die in the West. And as an amputee, I feel obligated to mention the fact that it does take place in Old Stump.
Yes. I saw your Facebook post. That was very good. So that was intentional, I think. I think so. Yeah.
I kept waiting to see a stump.
There really should be a rim shot sound effect on standby.
I'll work on that for next time.
I don't know. I think we've got about as many amputee references as we can have.
That's the thing. Yeah. Every time you're on here, you have some fresh like foot joke or amputee joke. All the time.
I'm trying to get my foot in the door, dude. Thank you.
Oh,
thank you very much.
Oh, man.
All right. No, let's start.
What a heel.
Oh, wow. No, let's talk about, Heartland Film.
Let's get back to business and
toe
the line.
I will actually, I don't want to have Greg on the show and then forget to talk about Heartland. So.
It's been, if I left right now, I'd be happy. So
would you?
Good. All
right.
See ya.
Well, that would be kind of awkward since the show's not over yet, but, you know, hey. No. Okay, let's start off by talking about the do you call it a rebranding?
Yeah, I would call it a rebranding. So we're formerly known as Heartland Truly Moving Pictures. Before that, it was just Heartland Film Festival. We're a nonprofit arts organization. We've been here in Indianapolis for 23 years now, which is hard to believe. But
so since you were seven.
Yes, yes. Where was I?
I'm kind of traumatized by your age, if you can't guess.
Yeah, so it's been around since 1991. Our mission is to inspire filmmakers and audiences through the transformative power of film. So that has not changed, really, just our name mm-hmm. and our logo. So we're best known for doing the Heartland Film Festival, but we do year-round programming, stuff all throughout the years throughout Central Indiana. We give an award to studio release films that we talked about before mm-hmm. called the Truly Moving Picture Award. So, but we branded, I think, back in 2007 to Heartland Truly Moving Pictures. We had a new logo with a heart-shaped sun over land, which was very deliberate. And just the name is a mouthful, Heartland Truly Moving Pictures. I mean, just getting it out. So we thought we'd cut five syllables off and just be called Heartland Film now. And to be honest, that's what a lot of people call this anyway. They're like, mm-hmm. here's Heartland Film. And it's perfect in terms of our programming. We do many different things, so it's a great umbrella name. It's mm-hmm. very quick, snappy, but also it encapsulates everything we do. So
new name, same great film stuff.
Exactly. So, I mean, the model's there, too. Tribeca Film Festival, their parent organizations, Tribeca Film, Milwaukee Film for Milwaukee Film Festival. So it's a natural mm-hmm. progression, too. So basically what we did that. But after 23 years, we just wanted to stay fresh and relevant. And I think people, it's one of those things, which actually today is the second to last day in the Nouveau Best of Indie voting. Mm-hmm. Right, Ed?
Yes.
Okay. And, yeah, and I think we're
bringing a sigh of relief, Ed.
Yeah. I don't have to vote for you. Only two more days of voting for
yes.
you and
yes!
I can finally stay off the computer.
Yes.
And I like voting for you. I'm just tired of doing it every day.
You got to have your loyal fans.
Yeah. So we both have skin in the race here, Richard and Heartland, with voting. So vote now on Nouveau.
I did.
Perfect.
You're up for Best Local Film Festival.
Yes, which we've never lost, so hopefully we don't
really
lose.
Really? You've never lost?
I don't believe so.
Wow.
I think we have the crown, so hopefully we'll keep the crown. And then also there's a new category, or one I hadn't seen before, something that has been going on in Indianapolis, but you haven't attended. And you had to be nominated this year, which
yes,
was the first
I saw
thing.
That.
So I thought we're on. So that, hey, that's great. That's perfect. It shows us exactly why we needed to rebrand. So mm-hmm.
what is it now?
It's something that's been like a Indianapolis staple that you haven't gone
that
to.
You have not gone to.
Yeah, something like, why haven't you gone to this?
I did not vote for you for that, since I do go every year.
Yeah, so I appreciate that. Thanks for knowing who we are.
I think I voted for Gen Con.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, I did, which I've never been to.
Also in the Best of Nouveau, Matt Soucy is up again for Favorite Radio Personality, and for the last 2 years, he has come in third, so vote him in third place again.
All those jerks at WZPL will stuff the ballot box again.
Give him the silver this year.
And our friends at the Film Yap, we do want to mention them, even though the Independent Critic is better.
Uh-huh.
Oh!
I know they're listening, so...
Hey, Joe. Hey, Chris.
Yeah, you guys are awesome.
I'll give a shout out to Austin as well.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
No, but with us, too, I mean, so we changed the name. We have a new logo. I mean, and just personally, I think our demographics has expanded so mm-hmm. greatly just in the last few years. For the last 3 years, we've been down in Fountain Square in the old Murphy Building, which historically it was a movie theater from 1928 to 1951, the Granada Theater. Mm-hmm. So there's a really neat history behind that. So you walk through our doors, and you walk in the actual doors people would come in to buy tickets back in the day. So that's really kind of a neat thing, too, but we're located right off the Cultural Trail, so we're open every first Friday. You can come in. We have a screening room, the Heartland Basile Theater.
Mm-hmm.
You can come in, catch some free short films, grab a Sun King beer for only $4. But that's great. I mean, you have free things and free things that are entertaining that people come around. It's just a great area. We used to be located above the old Spaghetti Factory on South Meridian. I don't think anybody would be stopping up on the second floor on top of the old Spaghetti Factory. So we love location, but people come in. I mean, I think we had an older demographic in the past. I think people thought maybe the misconception was that it was more family-friendly films, which we still kind of get.
You
every
still
now.
Have.
Yeah, we still have that, but we have the whole kind of range of films now.
I mean, we were talking about that. I mean, some of my favorite Heartland films are the edgier films.
Let me throw this in because we were talking about this before the show. There was suspicion among a number of people in the early days of Heartland that it was a conservative Christian group that was not saying that out loud, but really pushing a conservative Christian agenda. And in the pursuit of doing that, would take films that really didn't deserve to be in any film festival anywhere, but they had the right theme. How, I'm not, you know, saying whether that's right or wrong, but how do you, the people that are still skeptical of Heartland, what do you say to them?
I would say, actually, we've had people ask us that question point blank, and the answer is just no. I think the early foundations, some of the key funding were from people that kind of wanted values-based stuff. Because if you look at a lot of our old materials, it is the Heartland values. But now I think it's more of the curation of films. Where I think right now we're more of a curator than just something that has values. Mm-hmm. I think because really we want to show entertaining films that do much more than just entertain. Back in the day, I wasn't here for that, but I could argue with that. I could say, hey, that maybe that's how it was. Mm-hmm. But I say probably since 2011, we became an Oscar qualifying festival.
Yeah, this was long before that.
Yeah. So exactly. So I think since then, I can only hear stories of the past, and I might, based on some of the old films, I might agree with you. I'll be honest. Yeah. But since I've been here for 2 years, we've been really trying to catch up. With that and try to kind of dispel those misconceptions and everything too. So now I think it's all about inspiring filmmakers and audiences, like I said, through the transformative power film. Mm-hmm. The transformative power being the technical aspects, and the inspiration being something that can really kick you in the pants, go out and change the world, something that makes you look at something in a different light. But really it's more of what do you infer. I think that's been the huge shift, not just what you see on the outside of a film or just the basic, but what you can infer from it on a personal level. And with that too, I mean, if you haven't gone to the festival, you might still think that misconception is true. If you've been the last few years, our grand prize winner last year was a film that just got picked up by Tribeca film called Hide Your Smiling Faces. It was probably the most polarizing film we've ever had at the Heartland Film Festival. It's kind of like if Terrence Malick did Stand By Me, this very atmospheric, existential film about these boys up in the Northeast who deal with the loss of another boy who's passed away, who's died in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like that they go out kind of in the forest and they do their own thing and how they deal with it. And when you're a child, there is no final closure. It's just kind of getting to the next step, and the film kind of captures that beautifully. And some people adored it and some people hated it. And to be honest, we're not a film festival that's out there just to give you easy-to-digest things you're going to smile at and leave and be happy.
How has your audience changed over the years?
Yeah, since Found Square, I think our demographic was primarily middle-aged Caucasian women. Now Fountain Square,
and we love them.
Yeah, definitely.
We do.
Definitely.
We love them.
Yeah.
I mean, now that I'm in my 40s, I love them even more.
Yeah. Oh. So basically, we love. That's the thing. We honestly, I don't think
I love their husbands.
A core group. There's not a core group. I think you can kind of pinpoint to now with summer. We're doing Summer Rewind and all these other things. But every first Friday in Fountain Square, we open up the doors and show short films. So we have. If you've ever been to Fountain Square. You know what I'm talking about. If you haven't, definitely check it out on a first Friday. Very eclectic mix of people.
Are those the free screenings?
Yeah, free screenings. Every first Friday, the Heartland Basile Theater, we do every 15 minutes. You can catch a free short film or two, totally free, see some other stuff. But there's artist galleries. There's a lot of other great stuff going on. Very neat. So, so I think we've moved from specifically older demo to the tatted up 20, 30-year-old folks. We have families that come in, younger families too. I think it's just kind of cool. I think people may not realize, hey, we have this film community here in Indiana. And I think we've made big strides, especially in the last few years, to do that.
And so basically, if you're a tatted up middle-aged Caucasian woman, you're going to be thrilled right now.
Oh, you're going to love it even more. Yeah. And our new logo is so awesome. It's a film reel with some tall grass in it. You probably want to get that tattoo on
Absolutely.
Your body somewhere.
Absolutely.
We'll give you a free ticket. Why not? Get that tattoo.
Actually, I've already got both nipples covered with this.
Yeah. Oh, great. He's referring to stickers right now, not tattoos. Right? Or do you have tattoos?
You never know.
Ooh.
Richard's walking around with Heartland pasties. My goodness.
Perfect.
I love Heartland.
No, but I mean, last year too, just changing as an organization, I came in 2 years ago. We totally got rid of third-party marketing companies who told us who they thought we were, who fits with that old misconception, I think. So now that we're telling our own story, we do have this artistic side in terms of even submitting the films. Our call for entries ends today. But we actually promise that human beings will actually watch your movie at least 3 times through, where we've been to film festival summits. If it's a dude who doesn't like your movie after 5 minutes, you might not have a shot. So we have a jury process. So we take artistic integrity very seriously. And hopefully that shows through the programming and now.
About 2-3 years ago, Chris Lloyd and I were asked to talk to one of the Heartland juries, and it was basically how to gauge a film.
Yeah,
you know, and it was really nice because there was a big room full of people that were intent on doing the very best job they could, and were listening real hard, you know, to find out, you know, how to properly assess a film. It was impressive.
And in his heart,
and Chris and I were great.
Yeah, yes, they were. Yeah, critiquing a film is hard business, and I think that's hard because you want to appease folks. Where Indianapolis, I think we're considered the 27th, 28th film market, even though I think we're the 12th largest city. Mm-hmm. So there is a gap to be filled there, where there are people that are used to whatever's at the Cineplex. We have the Keystone Art Cinema, which is kind of an art cinema. They're playing Maleficent, they're playing great indies and stuff too. So it's kind of this hybrid. So there is this balance, and I think Heartland does that perfectly of showing films that could be inspiring, could be easy to digest to a certain audience that kind of have the same kind of intrigue that could inspire in one way or another, and then having these kind of more off the wall, what you would expect from like a true art house cinema, mm-hmm. Right here in Indianapolis. So I think that's where the demo's grown. And last year we had a record-breaking year. We had a record-breaking number of submissions, over 24,000 attendees, which broke our 2010 record. Wow. So I think between telling our story the right way and having some amazing films, I think word of mouth is spreading.
Why has there never been a Heartland horror film?
You know what? We had our first zombie short last year.
Did we?
Yeah.
Oh,
I think it just.
I didn't know that. I was on the shorts.
Yeah, I think it just hit, I think, some of the film sites a couple weeks ago.
Oh.
This cool zombie short. But to be honest, because that's the thing. I mean, how many inspiring horror movies have you seen, I guess? And
I'm very inspired by the Texas Chainsaw Massacre series.
Yes, inspired to get a chainsaw and
exactly.
do things. Yeah.
I always go to Ace Hardware.
That's not the inspiration we're looking for, Harlan.
World War Z taught me that it's important for a father to be willing to go all around the world and kill thousands and thousands of zombies to protect their family back in Detroit.
That you did learn something there.
That's what
did.
You got out of that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
My son was happy. I got a better Father's Day card than usual.
I do want to give some time to a couple of events that you have coming up. First off, I think the first one coming up is Bedford.
Yeah, so basically, I'll just kind of, in case you haven't heard, our founder and president, Jeff Sparks, he retired after taking a sabbatical last year. So our previous COO, Stuart Lowry, who has been with Indy Parks and the Children's Museum, a lot of the great mm-hmm. nonprofits, he has an acting background as well. He took over and became president around the new year, and he's really kind of taken us to the next level with pushing through the rebrand and a lot of new programming. So we kicked off the Heartland Film Roadshow back in 2011 with just 11 screenings, kind of taking these films out to the community. In 2012, we had over 15 screenings, and last year we had over 60. We have a staff of only 9 people, so the wear and tear, you can get really worked out.
Friendly for someone who stays busy.
Yeah, I work a lot, but I love it. You know, I took a pay cut to work for Heartland. I wouldn't have it any other way.
Cool.
But basically, we have this new model where, you know, people want to have experiences. I think gone are the days. You know, we still do them, and they're not as well attended as something bigger. Mm-hmm. Just had like a one-shot screening somewhere. But now that we have film series like the IMA, the JCC, something that people mm-hmm. can expect.
Love the one up at Center for the Performing Arts.
Yeah, so we do another series with the Palladium and the Michael Feinstein Great American Songbook Initiative. So we're trying to diversify, do a lot of different things. That's specifically with the Truly Moving Picture Award winning musicals. But what we want to do, we wanted these experiences. Indie Film Fest has done a great job for the city with having like Fight Club at the Catacombs. Mm-hmm. We showed Hoosiers at the huge scoreboard at Bankers Life Fieldhouse. So it's these things
that would have been fun.
Yeah, that was a great fundraiser for us. And people, I mean, it's granted the sound system isn't really made for films in Bankers Life Fieldhouse. You can imagine the echo.
Yeah.
But it just made those squeaky basketball shoes even squeakier, which mm-hmm. kind of made it pretty cool. But we want to do these kind of mini fest experiences where. It helps, too, with sponsorship. We are a nonprofit, so we've had some sponsors and grants that have been very excited about doing this model, where we want to give you a mini film festival experience mm-hmm. throughout the year. So we're actually kicking off two next month. So the festival's not until October 16th through the 25th. But we're going to Bedford. And people are like, why are you going to Bedford? Really neat story is that when you're a filmmaker at Heartland, we continue to support you in your film mm-hmm. even long after the festival. And we have this great filmmaker named Andy Redwine, who is from Bedford. I believe her film was in the 2011 festival mm-hmm. called Paradise Recovered, this narrative.
Great film.
And it was her first film that really launched her career. She got distribution for the film. It's on Netflix now. So
it won the Indiana Film Journalists Association Hoosier Award.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a success story right there. Mm-hmm. And she's in Bedford. And I think they had a big, I can't remember what it's called, but basically they had this huge grant opportunity around the state to put this video together and show us, hey, we want to revitalize your city. And she kind of spearheaded that for Bedford, and they won this huge grant. Mm-hmm. So it's really neat, too. But basically what we're doing is that we are showing 6 films over 2 days down in Bedford at the Bedford North of Lawrence Performing Arts Center. Tickets are only $6 a pop, so definitely very affordable.
And but it's only four if you're a Heartland member.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's not too late to join.
Yeah, go to heartlandfilm.org, all new website. Become a member. And it's tax deductible, but you get to support Heartland and you get some great perks.
And while you're down there, go to Blue Spring Caverns. It's really cool.
Wow.
Underground river, a cave, and a big cavern. It's very nice.
Cool.
So the unique thing about this Bedford experience, that the thing about you go to a movie, and for me, people are texting and talking. It's like, I'm just going to watch this on VOD. I'm going to wait for it for half the time. The thing about the film festival experience is that you get to see these films with people who want to be there, that want to see these films you mm-hmm. can't see anywhere else, maybe ever. Maybe they'll get distribution down the road. And you get to meet the filmmakers who make the film and find out why they did it. And it's just this really inspiring experience. Mm-hmm. So what we're doing, we're showing these films. We're going to have Medora, which was, I guess, the big winner at Indie Film Fest. Mm-hmm. We had at our festival about the small town Medora here in Indiana. Most inspiring sports movies are about basketball teams who are trying to make that last winning shot. These guys are trying to win a game, just one game, and they're from the Medora High School. So we're doing that. Director Andrew Cohn will be here for that as well. And if you buy a ticket to Medora, you get a free ticket to another screening, which is great. Ryan Suffren will be here. He's the director and producer of two short films called Right to Play and Running Blind. The unique thing about him, people think about independent filmmakers as guys who just make a film in the garage. This guy has great industry experience. He was the on-set assistant to Spielberg for three of his films. He's from Illinois, and he worked with Sam Mendes on Road to Perdition. And he dropped out of college, and he went out to L.A., and he made a career for himself. So a lot of people you meet at Heartland are people who, yeah, might be in industry, but they really want to do something artistic and something mm-hmm. that, outside the box. And then beyond that, we have a great documentary called Finding Hollywood. About the film industry in Rwanda and how they're kind of healing from the genocide, making films there. So director Leo Wachowski will be here, and post-supervisor Todd Soliday as well. And I think 10 o'clock, and this is June 13th and 14th, by the way, down in Bedford. The filmmakers will be there. It'll be a lot of fun. I think there's going to be a filmmaker panel at 10 a.m. on Saturday as well. And then after that, our big marquee event is the Heartland Film Festival Summer Rewind, a Fountain Square Mini Fest. So June 26th through 28th. We have 17 film screenings over 3 days. Like I said before, we're an Oscar-qualifying film festival, so it's going to open up on Thursday night, the 26th, with our Oscar-nominated and winning short films, followed by an after-party at the Hi-Fi. Do 317 Lounge has rebranded as well to the Hi-Fi, and they're just two doors down, so mm-hmm. we're going to have a party there. That's going to be a $40 ticket or $34 if you're a member. Every other screening is $7. But we have some great filmmakers who are coming back as well for this. A lot of great films, including some filmmakers who won big last year but just couldn't make the festival. So mm-hmm. Hide Your Smiling Faces, the grand prize winner from last year. That one, Daniel Patrick Carbone, the director, will be here. Another great film, This Is Where We Live, just had one of its premieres down in Texas this week. Mark Menchaca, spoiler alert, ladies, he looks like a young, hot Chuck Norris, which they actually make a joke in the film about. So if you want to, you know. So definitely come check it out. We're going to show all these different films. You get to meet the filmmakers who made them in Fountain Square. Our office is in Fountain Square. We love it. You get to come down there. The Heartland Basile Theater right in our office. You get to check that out. The Wheeler Arts Community. More information. Check out heartlandfilm.org. You can learn all about us. And all the good stuff.
Do you have the listings of the first Friday screenings there also?
Yeah, if you go, so basically, we used to do a poor job of showing what we have coming up. So heartlandfilm.org, go to the roadshow page.
It's a great website. Up. I looked at it. It's revamped nicely.
Should people vote for it, Richard?
Pardon me?
Should people vote for that website?
I don't think it's nominated.
It's not nominated.
Maybe they could write it in, Richard.
So I didn't have to be... Wow, Ed.
Yeah. Just to show you, too, like for Heartland, we have different shorts that we play as well. People always forget about the short film. So just to kind of show where we're at in terms mm-hmm. of the demos, we have one program called One Size Fits All Shorts for maybe the folks who like kind of the older Heartland stuff. And These Ain't Your Grandma Shorts for the folks who like a little harder edge on stuff. So mm-hmm. definitely come check it out. HeartlandFilm.org, Summer Rewind. It is sponsored, let me get this in,
yes,
made possible by the Margo L. and Robert S. Eccles Fund, a fund of Central Indiana Community Foundation, and Bedford is sponsored by Duke Energy, so thank you very much.
Awesome. I appreciate both of you being with me.
I'm sponsored by Costco.
And Fish Nibblers at White Castle.
Yes.
That's a beautiful thing. This has been Ed Johnson Ott from Nouveau News Weekly, Greg Sorvik, the Director of PR and Marketing and Marketing and PR from Heartland Film.
Thank you very much.
And Richard Probst from TheIndependentCritic.com.
Vote for him.
Thank you very much. Have a great week. Matthew will be back next week.
Thanks, Kobe.
Thank you, Ed.
This has been Film Sociology, a film talk show on WFYI HD to the point and WFYI.org. We gone. Good night, Fort Myers. Good night, California.